schlesische Tor. Aufstieg rechts.
Der deutsche Spargelkult müsse enden.
Germany's beleaguered defense minister has temporarily dropped his PhD title.
Volkswagen ist eine Perle der deutschen Industrie. Und ich glaube, das kann man nicht
sagen. Ich weiß, wie viel Liebe dahinter steckt. Wenn Glühweinstände aufgebaut werden, wenn Waffen...
Spargel-Weltmeister ist China, denn die bauen 60 Mal mehr...
Hey, this is Ted.
Hi, it's Michelle, and welcome back to Spaßbremse. Today's episode drifts away slightly from our bread and butter angle on German politics and history, and instead of just the usual ruminations on how everything is going horribly, we get to kind of zoom in and focus on some people who are fighting to make this country a little more fair and humane. Ted spoke with Anne Semsrott of Freiheitsfonds, or Freedom Fund, which is a project that bails people out of jail who were imprisoned for their inability to pay public transit fare evasion fees. Lots of Fs, Freiheitsfonds, fees.
It is. And yes, in addition to that, they try to end this practice, which you might be saying, what? Going to jail for not paying a ticket on public transit? So they're working to change this. And yeah, it's maybe one of the... For some context here, one of the weirder surprises when you come to Germany might be the lack of a physical barrier when you get on public transit, S-Bahn, U-Bahn, you know, und so weiter. But of course, anyone who has forgotten to buy a ticket and has gotten checked by the kind of undercover checkers sometimes they have, or just people standing at the exit.
They're not so undercover any longer.
No, they're not allowed to be anymore. Yeah. They were for a while. There is, of course, still enforcement of the fare regulations. But what you might not know is that the enforcement can be a lot more punitive than just the embarrassment of getting caught and the ubiquitous 60 euro fee. I think probably almost everyone listening to this has maybe forgotten to get a ticket at some point and,
and gotten never really forgotten. Mad at yourself.
You've never had the problem.
No, I'm like really scared.
I got a fine for not getting a bike ticket once. That was like, oh, come on. But, you know, it sucks to get pulled off the train and you have to pay and, you know, they take down your information or you pay them on the spot. But that's the sort of what happens to people who have the 60 euros and the people who don't, and especially don't have the money for subsequent increases and late penalties, can actually be put in prison. So, of course, this effectively criminalizes poverty in a way that, as we point out during the interview, does not apply at all for, say, parking tickets for cars. And Anna, who we spoke with here, he's doing really fabulous work, and we all encourage you to donate in the link in the show notes. I'm sure you'll all find his work really compelling after listening to the interview. And at the end of the episode, Michelle and I will discuss how this fits into the rest of the German political discussions that we often feature on this show, relate it to some typical Spaßbremse themes, and other types of discussion like that, so make sure to listen all the way through. And of course, as always, thanks so much to all our supporters on Patreon and everyone who listens both on the free and premium tiers and shares the show with friends. We'd especially appreciate you rating and sharing this episode, as we want to draw as much attention as possible to Freiheitsfonds as we can, because they're doing so much great work, and as Anna points out, really, the limiting factor in how many people they can get out of prison for this silly infraction is just money. They just need more money to do this, to get people out, and then eventually, of course, for them to help lead the charge for changing the law. So please support them if you can, and if not, please share with others, and maybe someone else can. On that note, let's get on to the interview. Hey, everyone, and welcome to Spaßbremse. I'm joined here by a guest I'm very excited about, who's doing some great work in Germany to try to rectify one of the more bizarre and niche, but also very important injustices that goes on in this country. I'm speaking with Anne Semsrott of Freiheitsfonds. Anne, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So just before we get into some of the details of what it's like, in terms of paying for public transit in Germany and the punishments you might face if you don't, because there's a lot to get into and a certain specific history here dating to the most unsavory time in German history, that this one thing certainly hasn't been rectified. But could you describe your project, your organization, and what you're trying to address in Germany right now?
So I founded the Freiheitsfonds, so the Freedom Fund, in December 2021. And it's a project that aims at decriminalizing fare evasion in Germany. And the way we try to do that is by starting with it ourselves, in a way. So we are freeing people from jail. If you can't pay your ticket, and then if you can't pay the fine that you get afterwards, it's possible in Germany that at the end of that process, you actually end up in jail. And if people then pay for your fine, you get freed. And that's what we're doing en masse. So we're trying to free as many people as we can that have ended up in jail because of fare evasion. And so far, we've freed about 720 people all around Germany, and have, I think, how would you put that, deleted or something, 140 years of jail time that they would have had to spend in jail.
Yeah, so before we get into the rest of the interview, should just say thank you for your amazing work. Like I said, it's pretty absurd that anyone is in prison for not having a transit on the U-Bahn, and you guys are doing phenomenal work trying to address that, as you mentioned, both on the direct level of actually just paying people's fines, and as we'll get into, lobbying for some political change. But, you know, a good amount of our listeners are in Germany and might know something about this law. A decent amount of others are not. It's worth giving some background and some context here, because when you say, oh, there's people in prison for doing this, right, you're a bit confused at first. So could you describe the evolution of this law and maybe the path that could take you from riding a train or a bus without having paid a ticket, ending up in a prison cell? Both evolution of the law and then the evolution of one, you know, a given individual's path from the one to the other.
Yeah, I think an important part of the background of all of this is that in Germany, usually you won't have physical barriers in the subway or in public trains. So if you are riding without a ticket, like physically, it's pretty easy to do so. You just don't get a ticket, but you get on board of a train. And it's always been like that in Germany. So that's the history of public transport. Usually they're built in a way that wouldn't allow physical barriers even. But what is special about this is that it's actually a criminal offense to ride without a ticket. And that was introduced in 1935. So a law that was created by the Nazis 2 years after they came to power. And you can see in that law how the Nazi way of looking at criminal offenses is shaped in that specific law. So the way people are treated for riding without a ticket, like for not paying €2.50 or €3 for a single ride, makes it possible for the state to go after them, and they might end up in jail, which means that the way the law looks at these people, who are usually people who don't have a job, people who just can't afford a ticket, the way it looks at them is that it kind of sees them as criminals, right? So poor people are usually affected by this law, and people who have enough money to, you know, afford their own car or afford to buy a ticket won't be affected by this. And every year, around 10,000 people end up in jail for riding without a ticket. So it's not something that affects a few people, but actually quite a lot of people.
And as you mentioned, I mean, there's this differentiation of different types of punishment for different infractions in Germany, and you make the contrast with the car. And so this is a key difference here, right? Like, you could park your car illegally, not pay the fine however many times. You're never going to end up in a prison cell for that. But you can if you don't pay the fine for a transit ticket. And there's a few other kind of infractions where there's this concept of substitute imprisonment. Could you lay out the different types of infractions in Germany and why this one specifically can lead to imprisonment, where the other other types of things cannot, because there's not, you know, we don't want to overstate the case and say there's like a general system of like debtors prisons in Germany. You know, for most things there's not, but for a few things there effectively are, you're thrown in jail for being poor.
Mm-hmm. So there's pretty much three steps or three levels of punishment. The first one that exists for riding without a ticket as well, that is just the civil law, right? So you don't pay for a ticket and you get caught, which means that you have to pay 60 euros. That's what everybody knows, right? It's common knowledge in Germany. If you ride without a ticket, it's 60 euros. Like 60 euros is the number. People know that.
And I'm sure a lot of people have had this happen to them if they forget buying a ticket. You know, it's kind of scary and uncomfortable, and a guy pulls you off the train and writes you a thing. But if you go pay it, it's 60 bucks, it's gone. That's the end of the end of the story.
And sometimes they don't even take your name or something if you just pay on the spot. I've been there. Everybody's been there, pretty much. But then it's not enough for the state. But the state will say that if the transport companies file a criminal complaint, they will actually persecute the people additionally. And they could do that as a minor offense, and a minor offense, or like an administrative offense in German, that's Ordnungswidrigkeit. That will happen if you park in the wrong spot, and it will cost you an additional 20 euros or something. But then the third level is actually a criminal offense, which, you know, it would be tax evasion or would be theft or other crimes like murder or something. So a criminal offense, like the hardest offense that you can have. And fare evasion is part of that. So it's something that you wouldn't actually, like if you think of the criminal system, wouldn't actually put up there. But since 1935, it's there. And what happens with fare evasion is that you will have to pay the 60 euros. But then in some cases, with some offenders, the transport companies will additionally file a criminal complaint, and then the state will go after you. And because usually in these cases, it's very easy to prove that you've done it, because there are ticket inspectors who will say that you rode without a ticket, the state will go after you, and then additionally to the 60 euros, you will have to pay usually an additional fine of, well, say a few hundred euros usually. Now, when you can't pay that, the German state says, yeah, well, we can't have people get away without paying that fine. So instead of you paying that fine, because you can't, you have to go to prison. And that process of you not being able to pay for a ticket, you not being able to pay for the 60 euros, you not being able to pay for the fine, in the end makes you go to prison, because the German state says, if you can't pay the fine, well, we have to punish you, otherwise we can't let you get away. And that means 10,000 people a year not being able to pay the fine and then ending up in prison.
And I don't think it would take an economist or a criminal justice expert to be able to venture a guess as to who this burden would fall disproportionately on. I mean, in terms of at every step of the process, right? Who can't afford a ticket in the first place? Who can't afford the fine? Who can't afford the fees? And then there's also the issue, right, where if you don't have a permanent place of residence, the ticket and the reminders might not ever reach you. And so you'll end up having an arrest warrant issued to you without you even having the intermediate steps in order to prevent that from taking place. So could you discuss a little about who the kind of people that end up in prison for these punishments, Straftat, right, is the is the German for the criminal offense. And we should say, because you'll hear this when you read about it, Schwarzfahren is often what it's called, literally black riding. That means riding without a ticket, but you'll hear these terms probably in our conversation and elsewhere, just to lay those out clearly of the German. But yeah, who does this affect? And yeah, what are the social costs of this kind of policy?
Yeah, so the German state doesn't really collect a lot of data about prisoners, which is a shame, really, because it makes it really hard to find out if the justice system and the prison system works, right? But from what the data that is available and that independent researchers usually have compiled, from that data we can see that the people affected by this imprisonment almost exclusively are people without a job, so they usually just don't have money, then usually it's people, or like in most cases, it's people without a permanent residence. And then it's often people with certain types of handicaps, with certain types of illnesses. We have about 15% of the people in prison for this who are suicidal, which is a huge danger because especially in the first days of people getting imprisoned, they are always in a shock situation. And you can see that the rate of suicides, especially in the first days of people getting imprisoned, is very, very high. So you have people who are already in a crisis, who then get sent to prison, which of course makes their crisis worse, right? So the idea behind the criminal system actually, or the prison system actually in the last few years, and like the politicians will always say that, is resozialisierung, right? Resocialization. It's not actually too much about punishing people, but it's actually about showing people the way to be a better part of society. Maybe, like, it's a bit paternalizing, right? But that's what it is, that system. If you look at these cases of people getting imprisoned for riding without a ticket, that there's no such thing. It's really just punishing them and making their lives worse than before. And people who didn't have money before, of course, won't have money after. But especially people who have had a permanent place of housing before might end up losing that because of the prison sentence. People who had working social relations with their children or their spouses or other people might end up losing these social relations with others. People who might have had a job might lose their job, right? So because of this nothing, because of people not paying a few times for a ticket, they end up in a worse crisis than before. And that's the social situation. We are also usually talking about the economical costs of it all, not because that's very important for us, but because we have a government that cares about that. And if you look into the cost of that just for taxpayers, right, just a day in jail will cost 200 euros. So if people end up in jail for a month, that will cost taxpayers 6,000 euros. So you will have someone who hasn't paid for a ticket 3-4 times, what is that, 12 euros maybe? And in the end, that person will be punished with a punishment that costs everybody 6,000 euros. So even from an economical point of view, even if you don't care about the people, it's very, very clear that it just doesn't make any sense from any perspective whatsoever.
So 6,000 a month, like, you know, that's, you know, 60, that's 100 fines, right? You know, you could write off for one person for a month. I mean, it's like you say, even the, you don't want to overly focus on the economics of it, but even from a kind of like neoliberal angle, it's a crazy punitive policy. And, you know, I've read also about people losing their spots, to say they're facing addiction and they lose their spots in therapy. So it's, instead of this resocialization term, it's kind of like it can be a desocialization, because you lose your whole social basis. Mm-hmm. You're maybe exposed to more, you know, quote, real criminals, if you want to phrase it like that. And then you end up in a worse place than you were to start with. And it's just, yeah, you know, you do this in the organization. And so I'm sure it doesn't start making any more sense to you. But for others reading about this, you keep thinking, like, this can't quite be right. You mentioned, you know, this direct action approach, right? Freeing people and then supporting a repeal of it. It's paragraph 265A. Is that the, mm-hmm.
Yes.
The correct one?
Yeah.
So I'm curious, you know, you mentioned these numbers of the people that you've freed. I think you said about 720 people have been freed already and about 140 years of jail resolves. And then this other kind of economic side of, in a funny way, even though you're trying to free people from the state, you also cite about 10 million euros that you've saved the state in money because it costs so much to imprison someone. I'm curious, though, given the scale of the problem and how many people are actually in prison for this, how do you go about selecting the cases of the people who are freed?
So the general idea is that we don't want to discriminate. So it's pretty much everybody who we can free, we will free. But because we've become so well known within prisons, it is actually hard for us to pay for every fine, because even though we do get a lot of donations, we've gotten 700,000 euros so far, and we've spent it all on freeing people, it's not enough, and probably it will be never enough, right? So what we have done in the past few months is that we don't free people on a regular basis anymore, not every day, which we've done in the first days of the project, but now we have something that we call Freedom Days, which is, I think, actually a copy from Bailout Days that exists in the US. So we have these kind of action days every few months where we free everyone that we get a letter from, pretty much. So we will free 70 to 100 people on that day, and that will usually be a campaign day for us as well, and media will be involved, and politicians will hear about it, more focused on that one day and not just on a regular basis, because, and that's important for us, we're not a social project as such, right? So we're not there to make it easier for politicians or for prisons to go on do whatever they have been doing, but we're trying to say, we're here for now, but we won't be. We're actually a project to repeal that law. We're not a project to save as many people as we can. Like, we do that, and of course it's important for us, but that's not what we're here for. We're here for actual change. We're here so that we're not needed anymore, pretty much.
No, I really like this about your guys' project, because sometimes, you know, in like left or progressive circles, you have this kind of never-ending debate of, you know, whether you should fight for political change or do direct action. And I think you guys take the right approach, which is, yes, all of the above. You know, Obviously help people while they're in prison for no reason. Like, let's solve the immediate injustice. But yeah, otherwise you're just cycling donation money from people's pockets into the states over and over on an endless basis, and you're never going to solve the basis, the basic
problem. And what I found interesting about the evolution of the project is that we drafted it initially as a polarizing project, right? We thought that prisons would hate us for it because we are undermining the criminal justice system, right? And we thought that prisons would be the first ones to say, you can't do that. And we've actually had lawyers tell us that it's not clear whether it's a crime to free so many people from jail, right? Because we're undermining the system. But what had happened then, after a few weeks, was that by now, most of the letters, most of the contacts that we get are from prisons themselves. So it is actually people working in prisons telling us, please free these people from us. Please free these people who don't belong here, which is something I would have never guessed. But if you look at the practice, if you look at people working in the system, they all know it's wrong. And they've all been saying that for years, and they wanted to change. And now we've got this absurd situation where the state on one side creates this problem, and then on the other side, the state is going to like a voluntary project and is saying, please, please save us from ourselves in a way.
Yeah, and that's a great segue to what I wanted to discuss next, which is, what are the actual political lines here, and who's in favor of this, of a change here, and who is not? Because it seems kind of crazy that something would persist for so long. I mean, let alone the law being dating from 1935. You know, you'd think just the pure optics of having laws on the books from that time is just, you know, it's like, go through with a pen everything that passed in a law, and, you know, between 33 and 45, maybe yeah, scratch that one out. They haven't done that with everything, apparently. And as we also talked about, some of the abortion laws on a previous episode, which also from that time period. But like you said, the prisons are against this, and a lot of the legal associations and the prosecutors and the courts also find this ridiculous, because, and again, I'm not trying to say the criminal justice system as a whole is good, or, you know, there should be prisons and people should end up there, but the regular sort of crimes, and the people who are trying to prosecute people for theft or murder or rape, whatever, they're getting their system bogged down by these like silly infractions. And so even the punitive carceral system thinks this is a stupid use of resources. And so you think, okay, well then who would be in favor of it? Like what's keeping this from changing? And so I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the opposition to the change, because as I've been doing some reading, it seems like sort of predictably the CDU, CSU are against the change. You hear the same kind of rhetoric that they would use, say, with like trying to repeal Hartz IV, where they're no, there needs to be, you know, incentives. We can't descend into a lawless state. You know, the public order will break down if we don't throw people in prison for this. Of course, you never hear such rhetoric about breaking the speed limit or parking illegally. That all of a sudden, no, we need to go easy on our beautiful drivers. I think a good amount of the SPD, though, are also on the same side. And what I found very interesting is the Association of German Transport Companies. So all of the, you know, the BVG in Berlin, basically, you know, Germany loves its associations and its associations of associations. And so this is one of those. This is the association of all the local transport companies. They're actually against changing this, too. And so it's, could you talk a little bit about what the roadblocks are here and what the rhetoric they use to oppose a change is?
Yeah, it's all about deterrence, really. So the idea, and you mentioned that already, is that people are just very scared that if you don't put people in jail for this anymore, people will not buy tickets anymore, which is bullshit, because the reason for people not to buy tickets, first of all, with most of the people, is because they can't afford it. And the reason why they buy tickets, I'm not always buying tickets, but the normal person would usually buy a ticket because of two reasons. Because first of all, they would usually think, okay, well, there's a rule. We will obey the rules, especially Germans will do that, right? That's one reason for people to do that. And the other would be the 60 euros. People don't want to pay 60 euros. They don't want to be in a social situation, which is awkward for them. So that's usually the reason why people buy tickets. It's not because they might end up in jail. So if you take away that jail thing, you will still have a system that is deterring people from riding without a ticket. Now, the problem, I think, in this whole debate is that the people most affected by this criminalization is a group of people that just doesn't have any lobby. It's people who are in jail, right? You can't lobby well from jail. And there hasn't been a very big debate on this just because people affected by it won't be present in the media and won't be able to present their case well. So you actually have a situation where a lot of experts will tell you that this is a situation that has to change, but you don't have that much pressure to change it, and you don't have a lot of consequences if it doesn't, right? No party will get fewer votes because they don't change this law. And what I hope that the Freedom Fund has done and will continue to do is to shine a light on this topic and actually present these cases in a way that will put pressure on some politicians to change that. And I mean, we do have a situation where the Justice Ministry has said that they are thinking about this. I mean, like, the rhetoric is all a bit vague, but from what
I've heard... This is the Marco Buschmann FDP-led Justice Ministry, exactly. Just to be clear, because with the three-party coalition, it's confusing. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're the ones responsible for this law. And from what I've heard, in autumn, they do want to present a draft law on this. Now, will it come? How will it look like? If they present a draft law, does that mean that in the end there will be a law change, or will there be fighting within the coalition and in the end there will be a compromise and that will go? I don't know, but I think we've at least come further than we have in the past few decades on this topic. And I would actually say if we don't succeed with this within this legislative period, this will be dead for another 10 years. So either it's now or almost never, like, who knows what kind of government is coming after this. But we have this debate now, and it's actually pretty clear that it has to change. And the CDU and their weird thing with deterrence, they're opposition party, like they are not the ones deciding on this. So it is the Greens, it's the Social Democrats and the Liberal Democrats.
Yeah, and because I believe it was in 2021 that Die Linke, their fraction, they proposed an actual legal change, but the opposition lines on this were kind of what you'd think, and it didn't actually go anywhere.
So I mean it's a normal thing. Whatever they propose, and even if it is common sense, it will get voted down. I mean, the reasoning usually is to put it on the table. That's what it's there for. But if we want a law to succeed, it has to come from the governing parties.
From the government, yeah. And so you mentioned the CDU and some of their opposition. There's a bunch of funny quotes that people express why, you know, we need this deterrence policy. Is one that I thought was one of the more extreme was this was the Justice Minister of Hessen, and she said, "Das wäre die Kapitulation des Rechtsstaates." That would be the capitulation of the legal state, or this Rechtsstaat is like a weird German term, but it's like a state that's governed by laws, as opposed to an Unrechtsstaat, like they would call the Nazis or the GDR, like a Unrechtsstaat. And so this idea that like the whole basis of a state which is governed by law would be capitulating if we were to not jail people for riding the train without a ticket. It's pretty crazy that people feel comfortable saying this kind of stuff. And like you said, the way the German political system sort of swings, and the center of gravity always seems to go back to the CDU plurality. And so the idea that, for all the faults we might have with this current government, that this might be as good as it gets for quite some time, especially considering even the CDU winning in Berlin, which is often thought of as a sort of left liberal haven. And so, yeah, it's like maybe it's now or never for this legal change. You know, it's one thing to say we shouldn't throw people in jail for tickets, right? But that's not the only kind of injustice that comes along with transport policy. So what do you see a longer-term solution looking like? I mean, because there's been some pressure, some of the proposals on the transport associations have been proposals to actually create kind of physical barriers to get into the stations, you know, the way you have in London or New York or any number of cities. They're really against this because, like you said, pretty much none of them have this. And there's about 135,000 stations in Germany, and it just wouldn't be affordable. I can see the logic there. I mean, that seems like a crazy use of resources to install barriers in every single station.
And probably you can't with a lot of stations just for fire hazard reasons and so on. Like, they're just not built for that. Yeah.
So I'm sympathetic to that. And, you know, when people, if someone suggests installing barriers as a solution, you know, you can easily point to any other cities where transit is governed very unjustly, with, say, in New York, where there's New York Police Department officers everywhere and like every MTA station trying to catch fare evaders there by jumping the turnstiles and brutalizing people who do that. So it's not like having barriers is the solution. What do you see as a political way to address this? Is it free transit? What do you think about some of the movements towards slightly more affordable transit, such as the Deutschland ticket, which should be coming online actually any day now, May 1st?
Apart from decriminalization, I think it is all about the question what kind of public transit we want. And I don't think that there's any other realistic way than free transit, really. Like, if we have the big climate debate, if we have a debate on what an affordable and equitable, sustainable city looks like, you need to put the focus on free transit. And like last year, we had these three really, really nice months in the whole of Germany. It was this really nice summer where there was this €9 ticket for everyone where you could ride in the public transport. So no ICE, not the speedy trains, but all the other trains and buses throughout Germany for one ticket, €9. And that led to a lot of people like having their first vacation in some other German city for the first time because they could actually afford the transit there. It was a great way for people without a lot of money to, well, not get caught by ticket inspectors because they could afford their ticket. It was a very nice period for the state as well because they didn't have to persecute so many people, actually. So it was a nice relaxing period for them. It was, yeah, this almost utopian period of 3 months. And I think it showed a lot of people that that's what good public transport politics could look like. And I think that's where we have to go. And 9 euros really is not so much. Like, if you have people pay 9 euros, then you can just make it for free as well. Then you don't have the bureaucracy around it, and that will just be nicer for everyone. And I think that's where it has to go. And what we've seen, what has happened instead, is this really typical coalition agreement on this now, where we have this Deutschland ticket, which is not a 9 euro ticket but a 49 euro ticket, which is a ticket that will give you access to like regional trains throughout the whole of Germany, but it is something that poor people just can't afford. It's just too expensive for the people who would actually need it. It's nice for people like me, like it's like it makes it a bit cheaper for me, but it doesn't really change too much for me either. It's this sort of compromise that takes this utopian idea and makes it into something very German in the end.
It's like they thought people wouldn't quite notice as long as they kept the second number the same. They're like, whatever we tack on in front of that, because Berlin was also, they had the 29 euro ticket where it wasn't for all of Germany, but it was just Berlin, and which is I mean, relative to the normal cost of a monthly ticket, I think in the Berlin area, what is it? I get one with my job, but it's like, is it up to like 90 or so now for the AB zone? It's really quite expensive. And so they were doing the 29 ticket, and then Germany's negotiating this and say, oh, okay, no, we need, and then they get up to 49, which is a lot of money because, like you said, for people that aren't hurting, you know, it's a little bit of a convenience, and it also frees up the issue of all these different transit associations. If you're in the Berlin area, it's pretty straightforward how the actual transit associations work. You know, you're either in Berlin or Brandenburg. But if you're in, say, like the Ruhrgebiet, like the Rhine area, a lot of Western Germany, like you look at these maps of the transport associations, it looks like the maps of like the Holy Roman Empire, where there's all these little like principalities and stuff all going in and out. And so even just getting the right ticket in some of those areas, I know, is just a total nightmare. And at least the simplicity of this is that it frees it up. And so that's a nice development. But in terms of the actual budget here of 49 and why that is such an unaffordable amount, like, could you talk a little bit about, I guess, the idea of like a social ticket and how that's evolved, but then also how Hartz IV and now Bürgergeld like allocates a set amount per month that people have to spend on transit, and how that often doesn't actually even equal what it costs to get a monthly ticket?
Yeah. So, I mean, the whole cost and benefit stuff behind the Bürgerticket, this is something questionable as well, but you will usually, so if people get like this, what is it, like basic income, if you don't have a job and you get this money from the state.
We talked about it on previous episodes. Okay. But yeah, Bürgergeld is the replacement for Hartz IV, like the long-term unemployment, where you get kind of like set amount that's sort of designed to keep you alive and nothing more.
Yeah, and you will find like these lists of what amount of money out of this you will usually spend, or like on average people should spend on food, on transport, and so on. And if you actually compare the money that you get for transport with the actual costs in a lot of cities in Germany, it's actually not enough. So the social ticket that you can get a lot of times will be something like these 49 euros, and that's not what you get under Bürgergeld. So there's actually no way for you to get these social tickets without, you know, having extra income. So that's one problem. And the whole problem behind it all is that transport companies, like the public transport companies, just usually don't have enough money. Like they don't get funded well enough, whereas other transport areas such as Autobahn, right, the German Autobahn, will always have funding, and actually there's usually more funding to buy new Autobahn, which is then lacking on the side of the public transport companies. So it's an interesting area because it is both social politics and it is transport politics, which then becomes a whole other field. And usually people who are affected by this just don't have enough money to get these social tickets.
Yeah, it's a perverse situation where there's not enough funding for the transport associations, who, you know, I think broadly I would see as more sympathetic than, say, like the Autobahn. But then to address that, the transit associations then look down, and rather than, you know, maybe directing more attention to try to get more funding, I'm sure they do that too, but they actually then are the ones who support some of these punitive policies and trying and saying, no, we need this deterrent effect of people being thrown in jail, so they pay the ticket more. And so it's like, you can see this goes all the way downhill from the top governmental level to the individual transit associations. And, you know, it's somewhat of a separate issue, but definitely related, is a lot of the ticket enforcement itself can be quite brutal. I know of people getting roughed up by the ticket inspectors on the Berlin transit, and I know that's happened elsewhere too. And so this whole kind of, it's a weird thing because, you know, like I made the contrast with New York earlier, I can do that again, whereas, you know, you're very aware of the kind of like carceral state and the enforcement policies when you walk into a subway station in New York. There's barriers, there's cops, you're very clear, like, here's the thing, if you don't do it, there is this like apparatus here which is designed to punish you. In Germany, you just go down into the station, there might be a little sign that says, you know, please pay the thing, no, can't go past here without a valid ticket. You walk in, you know, there's not anyone there, you don't see cops, you don't see barriers, but then there is still this whole carceral apparatus kind of hidden right below the surface that's waiting to come out and grab you. It's very good work you guys are doing. I mean, I appreciate this effort here. And oh yeah, so I wanted to ask, like, the future of your project. So what's your next Freedom Day, and do you have any other kind of initiatives or campaigns planned aside from just the recurring work to bail people out that you're doing?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're a bit torn between being this direct action and pressure group on the one hand, and then the normal processes that would push such an organization into becoming more of a structure and more, you know, a normal NGO. And that's something that we have to fight against as well, and remind ourselves that we're not a normal NGO and we're not there to stay, but we actually have to focus on repealing that law. Last week I've been to the parliament in an expert hearing on this law and on a law that is connected to this. And we're pretty well connected to the politicians, I would say, that are responsible for this now. And I think the next few months and, well, possibly years, we have to focus on putting pressure on them. I think that the Freedom Days and the way that we work is pretty effective, but I think that we have to continue telling stories of the people affected. I think that that's not done enough. We have to make especially the FDP, SPD and Greens as well, understand that it's not really about numbers, it's not really about deterrence, but it's actually affecting people in a way that nobody wants. And we will probably try to find different formats of telling these stories as well. We do have a lot of media interest in this, so TV and podcasts and so on, and I think we will have to find more ways of telling these stories and keep the pressure alive. There's two more years of this coalition, which means two more years of the opportunity to change the law. And usually I'm not really an optimistic guy, but I do think that, especially in this case, there is room for actual change and that we have to use it now or never.
Yeah, I don't want to be overly optimistic about the AMPL, but like you said, it seems like at least there's a little bit of positive movement, and it's impressive all the work and attention that you guys have been able to get in just a couple years. So yeah, I mean, we very much support you guys. I encourage everyone listening to go on to your guys' website and donate so you can keep up the good work. You guys, we'll link to it in the show notes. They have a very cool GTA-themed layout and background and some cool images on there. So great project overall. Honest Imsrod, thanks for coming on, and any sort of concluding thoughts or anything else you would want our listeners to know?
No, I think that's it. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, it was really great. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks so much again to Arne Zemsrott and Freiheitsfonds. Be sure to check them out. I think Ted mentioned this, but their website is pretty freaking cool.
It's cool. It's got good design, good stats, yeah. Good vibes. Yeah. Toss them some money. Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I enjoyed this a lot because it, you know, it ties together a lot of the things we talk about frequently here. You know, I know when we spoke with Julio recently, we talk about there are a lot of mid-sized German cities that have these really strong transit networks. And then there's sort of the dark punitive side of all of those weird HVVs, BVG, you know, all these, there's always a V in there for the patchwork of transit networks. And then they can land you in prison. It's not so good. So we want to keep the dense U-Bahn network. We don't want to keep the prison sentences. That's not what you want. But yeah,
it's not like they go together. It's not necessary to have one and the other.
You'd hope not. Yeah,
make things better.
I'm curious what you thought after listening to this interview, though, Michelle.
Something that really stuck with me that I found pretty remarkable is that most of their requests or referrals of prisoners who could be helped by this bail fund were coming from the employees at the prisons themselves. I just I couldn't really wrap, or I can wrap my mind around it, but it does present the whole thing in a different light when the people themselves who are working at the prison think that the people should, it's like, okay, so nobody's in control here. There's not.
It's disconcerting to realize, or to really have a clear example of a case where this is true, that, yeah, there's not even some kind of nefarious logic going on here that you could say, that you could sum up or justify in a kind of, in an economic way, really, at all. This is just a net drain for the state. Like we said, even if you're just counting money and trying to pinch pennies, it's purely punitive. It's a purely disciplinary thing. And that's what's so, like you said, disconcerting, feeling like there's not actually, in every case at least, this sort of governing logic of capitalism that's making everything run. It's like the carceral state is like, we don't really want this. This is crazy. The actual budgetary logic of it is zero. It's just a lot of conservative politicians who are like, we need to punish people to maintain order. And that's really all there is to it.
And I think it was, it's striking to compare the various forms of transport and the various breakings of rules of how that transport is, right? You park in the wrong spot, or you ride your bike on the sidewalk, or all of this stuff. And it just really makes me think about how public transit is one of the last, especially because there are no barriers in Germany. It's that's all of society mingled up together there. And they don't want it to be. They want some way of saying, you can't be here, you have to go elsewhere, you can't move around, you can't get around the city. Stop existing is just the message that comes from this, right?
Yeah, because obviously people have, as Anna pointed out, a lot of these people that end up falling into this punitive system, they have addictions, they need to go to therapy, they need to go to a doctor, maybe they need to go to the unemployment office. There's these places you just have to go. And if you can't even afford to get there, to get out of this trap that you're falling into, and then you end up even deeper in it. And this is even like, this is even for people that live in areas with public transit, you know, the dead zones and lack of accessibility for public transit is a whole other issue. And so, you know, leaving aside people that don't have a car and are in poorly connected areas, this is for, I guess you could even say, the quote, lucky ones that are in places where you can get to the job center on an U-Bahn or a bus or whatever. But then there's this other barrier of the cost. And yeah, the flip side of not doing what you need to do is landing in a prison cell, which is, it's a wild way to treat what should be a public service as a pre-carceral space.
Yeah, and I think the other connections that kind of came to mind, I'm not sure in what capacity we've like talked about this on the pod, but Schwarzfahren, like riding without a ticket, and, you know, first of all, just like the direct translation of like riding black, you know, it's like, ugh, okay. I don't think we've talked about it on the pod at all, so I'll just kind of go into a thing that I feel like we've talked about before, but maybe not. So when I was thinking about this, like, okay, who's allowed in public space, and like you need to get somewhere, and like, what if you don't have a ticket? It reminded me of these Telegram groups that you can join that report where the controllers are. And they have like, it's actually one of the cooler little community spaces, because people describe and give like live updates, and they describe like, this many people are here, and or like they're checking you once you get off the train at this stop, and it's just kind of this constant flow of like, hey, like, pass auf euch out, like take care of each other kind of thing, right? And so yeah, it just had me thinking about like the ways to resist this type of like over policing and over
I guess people do the similar thing with like with cars, but oftentimes with cars in the Blitze, it's more clear where it is. Like everybody knows that this street has one. And so you have to obey the law, and you can, sometimes you're driving in Germany, all the traffic slows down, and you can kind of figure, oh, they know that you have to go the speed limit here.
The other thing that I thought about is, I think I've told you about this, it is burned into my mind and I cannot find a picture of it. But on the BVG, like on the Berlin Public Transit Authority headquarters, they have their own advertisements, obviously, because what else are you going to put on your own building? And I think it must have been like 2017 or maybe 2018. They had this huge ad against Schwarzfahren, so like against fare evasion. And they had like this person like hanging onto one of the yellow poles. And the person was coded as like queer in the sense of, you know, they have long hair, but a kind of like masculine face and beard, but very like made up with lots of makeup on. And I don't want to misquote what this ad said, but it was something about Schwarzfahren and about, you know, not appearing as you are, or like
there was this rap song music video. Did you see that? The Ist mir egal. It's like the whole. You know, it doesn't matter to me. The whole premise of it, and I think the same person features in the video, and it's all about people kind of breaking social norms and taboos and doing weird stuff on the U-Bahn. And there's a ticket controller saying, "Hey, you can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want, but don't ride without a ticket."
Yeah, it was something.
We should link to that. We should link to that because it's this like,
I found it.
It's this especially annoying BVG thing of like, oh, we're so hip, and BVG, the Berlin Transit Authority. We're so transgressive and hip and cool, but oh yeah, we'll beat you up and throw you in prison if you don't pay the fines.
Here, I'm gonna send it to you. Okay, so it says, and this the version Ooh, that that's the bad. Version yeah yeah so the version that I saw on the like headquarters of the Berlin Transit Authority was just this person on the right, in the red hair, and so it was like longer, and they're like holding their hand from the top, and it says, but it said this exact thing, which is, wer schwarz fährt, muss Eier haben, which means it takes balls to evade fares, right? And it's like, on so many levels, this is a huge problem. Like,
yeah, they don't have that one, like, up anymore. They now they have their, now, like, they have their diversity. Now they have their, like, diversity print or whatever. It's like, just let people ride for free. And the thing we didn't mention too is that transit in Germany is weirdly expensive. Like, compared to, like, a lot of things in Germany are relatively good value, I would say.
Wait, can I finish my thoughts on this?
Sorry.
But it's like the implication that if somebody doesn't buy a ticket, they're hiding something from all of the world, and that, like, it's not okay to do that. It's not okay to hide something, quote unquote, like, or disguise, right? Like, it's like, oh, this, like, person is trans, and so they're not authentic. They're not, like, doing the right thing. They're not buying the ticket. It's like, it's not provocative in a good way. Like, this is fucked up. And yeah.
I don't think you'd even see it today kind of things. Like, the way the discourse has evolved even in 6-7 years is,
yeah.
But yeah, that's not great. It's, I also think, like, contrasting, as we do in a lot of ways, contrasting, like we said, how public transit and cars are treated, right? Obviously, we pointed to the difference in just the pure monetary value. We pointed to the fact that you can't go to jail for a parking ticket, but you can for Schwarzfahren. But also the way that some of the more conservative parties, like especially the CDU here, considering we don't want to give the FDP credit if we don't have to, but it would be nice if the Justice Ministry, which is led by them, actually made some change here. So we'll see about that. It seems like the CDU is the one who's still most intransigent about their opposition. And so they oppose having a speed limit on the Autobahn, but they want to keep sending people to jail for riding what should be a public service.
Yeah.
And it's this interesting definition of freedom, because they'll often frame their policies in the language of freedom. It's like, freedom for a lot of people on the right is the freedom to use your private property in whatever way you want to.
Yeah.
But it's not freedom to access what should be a public space for everyone. You want to limit that and punish access to that for poor people. But if there's someone who has the money to have a car, they should have free rein to use that in whatever way they want. And I think that difference in treatment, aside from just the money, is very telling.
Oh, completely. I mean, it's... Ugh, this FDP. They really...
Come on, Marco.
They really get under your skin.
Marco Buschmann, come on. Come through here for us, bud. You don't want to have your hopes riding on an FDP minister, but I guess that's where we are.
I guess the other thing, right, is, like, I can picture them... Obviously, I want public transit to be free. But in the meantime, if they're going and controlling for tickets, just let someone buy a regular ticket. It's like €3. You know, like, give somebody the chance, being like, oh, hey, like, can you buy a ticket? If not, like, can you get off the train? Like, I don't know.
To be,
like,
fair,
it's just
the,
like,
what they would say is that no one would ever buy a ticket then, because if your downside case is just the €3 ticket and you're only checked 1 in 10 times, why would you ever buy a ticket? Like, that would be their argument. I agree, transit should be free. But I think if you have a world of paid transit, that sort of makes a bit of sense.
I don't know. Like, I think a lot of, I don't know.
No, I mean, I agree there just shouldn't be any fee in the first place. Or yeah, I guess you could say you have to.
But
just,
I'm just,
like,
saying,
step,
like,
off
if
the
they
train
want to retain all these people's jobs, if that's what's preventing them from, like, it's not what's preventing them from making it free. But, like, you know, there is kind of an apparatus that is associated with these controllers and, you know, whoever processes whatever fees and all this stuff, like,
yeah. And I think there's a weird, this is a bit more speculative, but I think there's a weird kind of pleasure that a lot of people derive from seeing someone get punished for not following the rules. I think it might be a bit fair to say that people derive a little bit more pleasure from that on average in Germany than some other countries.
I mean, it's true. Like, in that moment when you realize there's a fare checker on your train, and like everybody's kind of like looking at each other to be like, who's gonna get caught?
Like I did my homework. I'm not getting in trouble. Yeah. And so I think there's even a weird kind of sick pleasure that comes from seeing people get caught out kind of at random like this. It's like, because most of the time you buy the ticket and you don't get checked and you're like, oh, I could have ridden for free. Right. And then, especially if you're the kind of person that likes this sort of moral tales, then you see someone get caught and it's like, ah, well, that serves them right. I did the right thing and I get rewarded. And it creates this, like, every time a checker comes on the train, it creates this recurring kind of morality play, which I think does have a place in the culture that some people would be a bit sad to let go
of. Yeah, that sucks. It just sucks. Like, it's, it could be so good.
Yeah,
the infrastructure is literally there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's already built. It's not like the US where you have to start from scratch. Like, it's there. You just have to let more people use it. And it's the other, like, this rhetorical trick that people use where it's like, it's also very interesting to me in political discourse, what is a necessary, like, freedom that everyone should be able to exercise, and what is, like, the first domino that will fall in full-scale societal collapse. You know, like, a lot of things that they'll be like, oh, of course we need to not, you know, not punish people who speed more or something like that. You know, that's just like the right of the citizens to do what they want. But if we stop sending people to jail for Strafen, like, who knows what'll happen? We're going to undermine the rule of law. And it's like, it's so inconsistent where German politicians, especially towards the right, draw this line from, like, where we need to show permissiveness and where we need to draw the line absolutely, or else who knows what'll happen to society. So yeah, any other concluding thoughts? That expresses most of what I had on my mind about this.
That's about it for me. I am a bit pissed about the Deutschland ticket being so expensive. 49. And did you know, I was going to add this, that, like, somebody who's poor can't get the Germany ticket just because of lack of funds. You actually can only do it in a subscription.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, you can't have a one-off month where it's like, okay, I'm going to save up 49 euros and I'm going to, like, take July where I really want to go. I have vacation and I'm going to go on all these trips to, like, German cities and, like, see things. And that's not a part of the deal. Like, it, like,
you're on the hook in a recurring way. Yeah.
And apparently they were discussing, like, whether they should check your credit score before you can get a subscription. Like, insane to include that in what should be, like, it just goes counter to the entire idea of the project. But
it's such a cliche at this point, but it's expensive to be poor. Like, yeah. Yeah, that's grim. Okay, well, we'll leave it there for now. We'll see you back on the premium feed next time. And thanks so much for everybody for listening. Like we said, donate to Anna and his group. They do great work. And help them fight the absurdity of people being thrown in jail for a truly victimless crime for using a public service that should be free for everyone. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Tschüss.
Tschüss.